Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Remember the old Clinton campaign days?
It's the economy, stupid.
James Carville there. Today, it's the internet, stupid, or at least the internet economy, that will be driving campaign tactics as we head into the fall. Micro-targeted ads, the personalized social media campaigns, and the big data-driven initiatives, it's almost as though the campaigns have taken a few lessons of people-watching from the NSA. Kara Miller is host of Innovation Hub from our partners PRI and WGBH in Boston. She's been following how the campaigns are quickly changing with new technology.
I mean, what we're looking at is 2014 really being a test drive for 2016, which is where the really, really big money and the techies are coming in strong. So one thing we've seen, just a sort of taste of things to come, is you look at a situation like House Majority Leader Eric Cantor getting defeated just a few weeks ago by David Bratt. And one of the things that happened is that David Bratt built a strong community online of Twitter followers, of Facebook followers, and he realized, and the people who ran his campaign was actually run by a 23-year-old, but they realized that getting people to really care about you and then go evangelize on your behalf is crucially important to politics. So here's Jonathan Alter, who has written a lot about Obama's 2012 team and the approach that they took to this social media campaign.
What was so extraordinary about the Obama campaign is they were able to recreate, especially in 2012, where there were great advances over 2008, they were able to recreate this older kind of politics using technology to recreate neighbor-to-neighbor, friend-to-friend politics.
And Alter makes a great point there, but to sort of unify it with the Eric Cantor headline, which was a big shocker, I mean, you know, we're starting to see that this kind of social media technological approach can really be decisive when in a primary for an off-year election, you know, you can do stuff that moves the needle with just 36,000 people. I mean, that was all that was really at stake there in that Virginia district that turned Cantor out of office. So, you know, at the primary level, the numbers here are very, very important.
Exactly. And in a lot of ways, it doesn't work if the online world does not go offline. So the data showed people during the Obama 2012 campaign, which I have to say was this really breakthrough technological campaign, that most of the people following them on Facebook, following them on Twitter, they were going to vote for them. They didn't have to win those people over. The reason to keep feeding those people and stoking them was to try to get them to move offline and be so excited that they said to their neighbor, that they said to their friend, hey, will you go to the polls with me? Or, hey, have you heard about, you know, voting for Barack Obama? I think you should, and here's why you should. I actually talked to Teddy Goff, who was the digital director of that Obama 2012 campaign, and he said, look, we're at a 50-year low in people believing in government. What people believe in is their friends.
It's quite clear people don't trust politicians. They're increasingly sort of inured to political ads, but they really trust what they hear from, you know, validators in their community, people who are in their lives, personal friends. And so the strategy was not, you know, to put out a cute picture of the president and his dog and hope that that persuaded somebody. It was to put out that kind of content, hope that that kept our supporters inspired and engaged, and then send them off to be a much more persuasive spokesperson for us than we ourselves as a campaign could be.
So this really means getting away from the idea of candidate as brand maker and really using social media to create more of a movement with a candidate at the center, but the candidate not defining everything here. And do we have the tools to do that sort of thing?
We are developing them. So I'll tell you a couple of really interesting things that are happening. One is on the television landscape. So for a long time, it was just that politicians would take a ton of money, throw it at radio, throw it at TV, throw it at print, and hope that it hit somebody whose mind could be changed. But really, they didn't know who they were hitting. And now what we're seeing in 2014 already, this is the first campaign where this is going to happen, and it's going to happen more in 2016. You can tailor your 30-second ads to the things that you've learned using social media, using big data about the people in that house. Already, this is available in 20 million homes. DirecTV and Dish is already allowing this to happen. Pandora, which you know creates sort of customized radio for people, is allowing politicians to target ads to people. And this is just going to get more and more pervasive as cable set-top boxes get traded out for more sophisticated hardware. Another thing we're seeing that Teddy Goff told me about is we're going to see websites so tailored to what you are interested in that you and I will go to the website of a politician and we will see two different websites. Here's Teddy Goff.
Pretty much everybody saw more or less the same version of BarackObama.com, whether you were an undecided voter in Florida or a diehard supporter in New York City. And that's not going to be how it goes in 2016. You know, the same applies to social media. The same applies to email. You know, basically every aspect of the campaign is going to be much more highly targeted, highly personalized.
And, you know, what's so ironic here is that, you know, one of the issues in the campaign, both in 2014 and especially in 2016, will be the technology and what it can do for people like the NSA and the National Security Establishment. And yet some of the same techniques that the NSA can use will be used with relish by the campaigns to make sure they're targeting the right people and trying to get them into the voting booth, right?
Yeah, and I think what frightens me a little bit, actually, is that you're going to have candidates sitting in war rooms saying, we only want people who make more than $100,000 a year to see this ad. I really, you know, wouldn't want somebody who makes $40,000 a year to see this ad. So make sure that nobody sees it who makes that much money. And so people will be, you know, maybe voting all for the same person, but they're going to be living in different realities in terms of thinking about that person, their policies, and the message that they put out there about themselves, because it's everything is tailored to you.
As a journalist, before we go, do you think this diminishes or amplifies the impact of money in the campaign? That's certainly going to be an issue.
I think it amplifies it because what you're going to have is you're going to have politicians, and this was true in 2012, looking for the best technological minds out there. They're going to be looking for the slightest advantage over the other guy. And that means maybe luring people away from a Facebook, from a Google, where they're doing very, very sophisticated stuff like this. And so money is going to be, as it always is, I think, at a premium in terms of figuring out the absolute best way to create the campaign that, John, it's just for you.
Kara Miller, host of Innovation Hub for PRI and WGBH Radio. Thanks so much, Kara.
Thanks, John.